revolution is in the air. The workers are fed up, and together as a nation, we're walking off the job. Unite with us now as we throw down our tools and storm the barricades on this, the sweetest of all days, Bloody Sunday. With those two fearless leaders of the push, those comrades in arms, Chris Taylor and Craig Rucastle.
Yes, a very good afternoon to you right across Australia. And Craig, the thing I love about that opener is it doesn't talk the show up at all.
No, not at all.
It doesn't overstate the importance of what we're trying to achieve on a Sunday afternoon.
And we keep going beyond that. That's what I love so much about this show, Chris. We keep going beyond it. This is the only show where you speak to all 1,000 women who have slept with Warnie.
That's coming up on Triple J. Good afternoon to you. Chris and Craig filling in for Roy and HG right up until 5 o'clock with you this afternoon. Hope you're having an excellent weekend. That's something for Kate with O Kamikaze.
And can I just give a warning? If you are a resident of Toowoomba in Queensland, you cannot listen to this show.
Why is that?
This week they had a vote on whether they wanted recycled shit. They said no. This show is all recycled shit. Turn off.
The scripts weren't good enough for television.
Exactly.
Get a half-assed air in on Triple J every Sunday afternoon.
You don't want it. You don't get out of here. Did you see?
Well, no, I know that because Peter Beattie, the Premier of Queensland, has been talking recycled water all week. There's been a big debate because of the water crisis that the whole country is facing about whether it is time to start look at recycling effluent water.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
what Toowoomba's taken the plunge.
They voted on it, and 60% of people said no, so
soft.
They've gone against it.
Soft.
I mean, personally, I don't mind. I'd be happily do it. Like they always have those little kind of Pepsi-style challenges where they have the water, just the normal water and the sewage water. Mm. You can't tell the difference.
It couldn't be worse than Forex.
Exactly.
Forex gold shit? I mean, I would kill for a bit of shit to be added to my Forex just to make it a bit more palatable.
You do those little challenges with the sewage before it's been recycled, and people still choose the sewage over the Forex.
The amazing thing is I actually had a mate who actually does this. Like he's a...
Well, he does the sewage.
He does that end of it, yeah, and then gets it to mix it with someone else who looks after the water end of things. No, he's a scientist, and he told me what the process involved, and he said it's identical to the process for making Dr. Pepper. There, from above, 1979 with a remix of Blood on Our Hands. 2:10 this afternoon with Chris and Craig. We're talking recycled effluent water after the residents of Toowoomba have resoundingly said they're not up for it.
Do you have a problem with the word sewage? What's effluent water?
it seems
like you've come up with some... You're doing some spin for the Toowoomba.
It's a bit like that. Because we're basically, let's face it, we're talking about poo. You try to use a more formal word to justify the conversation.
Effluent water?
Effluent.
Effluent H2O was...
I'm surprised Queensland's been so negative to the whole proposal, given... certainly in the Sir Joe years, politicians were recycling shit for
all
years
the time.
And forcing it down people's throats. In fact, jurors were forced to deliver shit verdicts
exactly.
If Sir Joe was ever on trial.
The great irony is that everyone in South Australia is going, look, send us the water. We'll take anything's better than the current water we've got.
Good afternoon, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, fellas. Yourself?
Good. Very good. Now, you're from Toowoomba. Where do you stand on the issue?
Definitely a supporter of it, mate. Yeah, definitely.
So you voted in favour of recycled sewage?
Yes, I certainly did.
Did you do one of those taste test things they had going?
Mate. Yep. Good as gold.
No difference?
No difference at all. Actually, when you move to Toowoomba, you think the water actually tastes like Powers. It's that bad. You know, Powers.
Powers is a step below Forex, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Very much below Forex. But this stuff is top of the range, mate. It's, crannies or above. So.
Right. Mark, do you think more people from Toowoomba would have got behind the initiative if, say, it was a celebrity stool? Like, say, Peter Beattie himself had come in and just taken a dump in the
celebrity
water.
Dump.
Put it through the purification and then... Because then you'd be drinking... Ode to Beattie.
Mm. Well, possibly, but Smiling Pete reckons his shit don't stink, so I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, it comes pre-purified with him. I mean, let's face it, Perrier water, I'm sure the French just piss in a bottle and send it out to us.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
That's all it is.
Now, Kate's given us a call from Canberra this afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Good. Now, you reckon this is already going on at McDonald's, yeah?
Yeah, it is. McDonald's on the highway at Glen Rowan between Albury and Melbourne. They set it up. I can't remember what year. It might have been 1992, I think, was the first Macca's on the highway. And they couldn't get the water out there, so they had to start recycling it. And I didn't know until my sister worked there. So
really?
That's what's going on. Everyone's gone to snowy drinking, recycled water.
God, it's better than the normal post-mix cola they give you when you order your value meal.
Yeah, well, yeah. They always bloody pack those drinks with ice, don't they? So, yeah. I mean, all that ice, it's pretty much, you know, stopping your Sprite or your Coke actually becoming a drink. Yeah. That was all just frozen effluent, was it?
Frozen effluent.
Yeah, yep.
That's
you're
great.
You're drinking it and then you're going back to the bathroom and you're drinking it again, so.
No. See, no one notices. Let's go for it.
No, forget about the golden arches, the brown arches. That's Badly Drawn Boy this afternoon on Triple J with Pissing in the Wind. We also heard Rise Against in there with Ready to Fall. You are with Chris and Craig doing Bloody Sunday.
And there's a big debate this week over the new so-called budget airline Jetstar. Mm. You know, it's got overseas flights and you've got to pay for your blankets and all that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jetstar, they pretty much make you pay for everything.
Yeah.
Just for the right to sort of, you know, walk within 20 Ks of their terminal.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to pay. Like, Jetstar's just all cost-cutting these days. Use a pay system.
I think it's a good right approach, though. I reckon you should be able to literally just have a rundown of what you want to have. So seats, tick.
Yep.
You know, you should be able to just stand there in the aisle and get a cheaper flight. You know, or just use the bathroom for the whole... Or to use the bathroom should be extra.
Well, they should. There should be one of those little attendants inside the airplane cubicle. I mean, I know some people say they're already a little bit, you know, squashed in there, but if there was just a little bellboy with his hand out...
You have to really kind of plan your flight going, OK, I'm leaving this time. Can I make it to Thailand without going to the toilet? Or do I pay the extra $20? And that's budget travel for you.
Cheesy hostess banter. There'd be
extra.
There'd be a levy on that, wouldn't there?
Or is it the extra of the other way? I don't know whether you pay or you wouldn't pay for that kind of thing. I think it's the right approach because there should also be because I think they've already got this on Jetstar. I think they've got whether you pay for safety or not. You know, like you can go. This is the plane where we got the aircraft mechanics to actually check it, and here's the one where they didn't. $50 cheaper. Do you want to go that? It should all be optional.
What I found interesting, but I guess not entirely surprising, was that when they announced they're doing these flights into Asia, going to Thailand and Malaysia and so forth, it's still out of Avalon Airbase, isn't it?
It's in Melbourne.
So if you're going to Bangkok, you get off at Avalon and you have to get a cab to Bangkok from there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the Jetstar approach. It's much cheaper that way.
On Triple J. That's a band from Brisbane called Mexico City. And Apathy is the name of that track. 25 past two, still on Jetstar. I noticed not even Jetstar yet. Settle. Not even Jetstar has thought about yet introducing an extra fee for drunk celebrities to go on and cause havoc on the planes. And I think there would be a very lucrative market because it seems to be... not a week goes past these days before someone's hauled off for disgraceful behaviour. It was the Hoff this week.
The Hoff this week, that's right.
The Hoff pissed as a nude at Heathrow, apparently, not allowed to board his flight. If it's not Hoff, it's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or the Salvos Band. These musos think they can just waltz in and trash innocent passenger commercial flights.
That is the first time that Hoff has ever been called a muso, except when he was talking himself.
Sorry.
Did you say that story was very bizarre? Because not only was he too pissed to get on the plane, he apparently... picked up, like actually lifted off the ground, a woman working in a duty-free shop. You know when you say, oh, yeah, before I get on the plane, I pick myself up some duty-free.
Right.
He just picks himself up the duty-free woman.
He thought it was booty-free.
Exactly.
He thought he could just wander off to the shop attendant.
Air hostesses are so expensive nowadays. Often before you get on the plane, if you're the Hoff, you need a few women for the plane. You just pick myself up some air hostesses, some duty-free women.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, you know, if Jetstar aren't going to pay for hostesses, if you can BYO a hostie, then you just save a pretty penny. Yeah. I think Hoff's probably one step ahead of the rest of us.
He's thinking, as always, Hoff.
His management was very quick to get a statement out denying that he was drunk, saying, quote, it was his own decision not to board the plane.
How do they describe his lifting up into the air and twirling around the duty-free lady?
That was the woman's decision to be lifted up.
That was her decision to be
lifted up. Absolutely,
exactly.
Hoff didn't. He was a very involuntary party to that act.
He wasn't pissed. He was just waiting till there was a plane that was being flown by Mel Gibson.
On Triple J, you are with Chris and Craig on Bloody Sunday, filling in for Roy and HG for a couple more weeks. That's Errol JM with Zeros and Ones. We're talking the Hoff, drunk Hoff.
Is there any other Hoff?
Look, apparently, we said he denied being a little bit intoxicated, but he did think the plane was talking to him. Now, look, this is a common symptom with him. He thinks anything that moves, any sort of mode of transport, ever since the days of Kit on Knight Rider, he just hears talking automobiles, talking planes, And I think when he started chatting to the nose of the plane there at Heathrow, I think a lot of the staff just got, the ground staff I'm talking about, got a little bit concerned that he might have had one too many.
No, there's not. That's just the Hoff.
That's the Hoff. He hears aviation talking.
He talks. And apparently every single, machine that talks to him says, Hoff, you should sing more. I just wish they'd stop saying that.
You're on Triple J. On Triple J this afternoon, that is Pete Philly teaming up with Perquisite. Off the Mind State record, a track called Grateful. We also heard 07 in there with You're My Flame. You are with Chris Taylor and Craig Rucastle this Sunday afternoon. And look, it's been a very big week in our Prime Minister's life. Johnny Howard celebrated his birthday midweek, turning the big 6-7.
Didn't they love him down in Melbourne? Yarra.
He got mobbed, didn't he? I think I saw some mobbed. School kids mob him.
School kid. Well, initially he came out of the hotel and he got a kiss. You got a kiss from some old lady there, and that was just the start of the day. Then there was all these kind of young rowers who coincidentally were from Peter Costello's school, the school that he went to.
Yeah, yeah.
And they started going, hey, Johnny. So I don't know if you saw it. He gave the most awkward hug. He walked up to the two of the girls.
He's not a good hugger, is he?
No, he's not.
It doesn't come naturally to him.
I think he was just toey. He got the kiss. He just thought, oh, this is my day. Well, I'm moving on.
He thinks he's warning. He's read the Paul Barry book on Warn. He's going for the thousand. He goes, bloody hell, if Warn he can pull.
He didn't realise.
I like cricket too. Maybe I've got pulling power.
He didn't realise being famous meant he could pull. So he went the awkward hug. But then one of the other kids kind of saw Howard there and ran up from wherever he was and kind of ran up and hugged him. But he just happened to be, because he'd been fixing a boat, he happened to be holding a screwdriver.
Fixing a boat? Was he trying to get a boat ready in time to pick up those trapped Australians in Beirut? We've got school
rowing
kids
out.
Building boats, rowing. No wonder they're taking so long. We've got bloody GPS rowers doing the job.
Exactly. No, I think he was going to patrol the shores to ensure refugees didn't come in.
Excellent work.
He went and hugged him, and there was apparently, I didn't even realise, because there was this big, all the stories the first few days were about the scandal that the kid had hugged him, but they didn't highlight the fact that he was holding a screwdriver was the actual reason for the scandal. But John Howard said it was no problem, and the security said it wasn't any problem.
Well, was there any suggestion that these guys are, well, you said, from the old alma mater of Peter Costello? So they're probably in the Costello camp.
Well, clearly not from that day.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, they're using affection as a ruse for some kind of assassination attempt. Costello's sort of trained them up in their craft lessons or rowing, after school curricular activities to sort of arm them all with, various tools from the toolbox, screwdrivers, mallets, wrenches, that then the next time they see Johnny, they'll go and stick one in.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it has just opened it up for anyone who's ever wanted a screwdriver, old Johnny. It's double standards, because yesterday, I saw him on his walk, I ran up to him with a chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
Security was all over me.
I know.
Double standards.
I took a battle axe to his head. I had the feds on me. Chris and Craig with you this Sunday afternoon. That is Ash and Orpheus. It is 2:45. And we're just sort of analysing the Howard incident, where private school people, you say it was, that went up and hugged him with a screwdriver. Well, yeah, as you said, the initial scandal was over the fact that someone could get a screwdriver so close to the Prime Minister without security checks. The real scandal, I guess, is that anyone of a youthful age would want to hug the Prime Minister. I mean, only insofar, but then you, I guess you remember they come from private schools.
Although the stats nowadays are the Prime Minister is more popular with young people than kind of anyone else. Like, he's really popular with young people. They love Johnny. It's like he's the kind of daggy uncle that they kind of got used to and they've grown up with him. I mean, a lot of kids nowadays have never seen any other Prime Minister.
No.
They only know the way of John.
It's like Santa, isn't it? Like this jolly old fellow.
Yeah. It's maybe, old generation.
Wouldn't it be interesting if John Howard went in the Big Brother house or went on Australian Idol, genuine popularity contest.
Popular is he really?
He'd probably nail it.
The next step.
I mean, forget about, whoever's in the house at the moment, whoever the characters are, but I'm looking for a name and you're not coming to my rescue, are you?
There's one.
Imagine if Johnny popped himself in, knowing how popular
Johnny
he is
the gay farmer
with young people. I mean, he'd probably cream it, wouldn't he?
He would. I think the thing is, the reason he's got to retire is I think it's time for him to tour now. He's built himself up to the position, we need a Johnny tour. Just screaming, screaming teens.
Howard Mania.
An auditorium full of, I don't know what he'd do.
Well, not since
a bit of budget material.
Well, I'd love him just reading out some old budgets, like some of his early.
Going back to when
he was Treasure, like under Peacock, back then. Some of
old
the
material.
Early, I mean, they are classics. And don't tell me the kids wouldn't go back and be interested in some of that retro gear.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, not since the 60s have we really seen the girls of Melbourne Adelaide, Brisbane go nuts over the Beatles and get their haircuts like that. I can just see girls fashioning their eyebrows now on the Howard Mania.
Shaving the top of their head.
Oh, it'd be going crazy.
It would be fantastic. Step aside, get out of the Prime Ministership, Johnny. It's time to go bigger. It's time for the John Howard Tour.
On excuse me, on Triple J, you are with, you are with the Throat Cancer Network. Mogwai there from Germany, and tonight, following Augie March with The Cold Acre off their Moo, You Bloody Choir.
Just you mentioning throat cancer there, have you seen those new anti-smoking adverts? The ones with the mouth cancer on them?
Yeah.
God, I think they're so confronting.
They're very graphic. I'm not a smoker, but I've just picked up passive throat cancer, yeah, clearly for today's shift. But no,
they've put me off food. They haven't put me off smoking. I don't smoke either, but they've put me off food. Like every time you see it, I'm losing weight.
Well, they put you off. I at the little convenience store just around near where I live, they're very prominently displayed because the cigarettes are obviously behind the attendant who works there. And you don't even want to order chips or your soothers anymore.
No,
all you see is these awful decaying mouths and swollen, you know, cancerous feet. And whenever I'm in the queue and see the cigarette smokers buy, I've heard them say, I don't know if this is a common thing, maybe it is, but they always say, can you give me one with a nicer picture?
Yeah, or
because apparently some are a little bit more graphic than others.
Well, some people can't really adopt it, so they go, can I have the throat cancer one, please? Can I have the mouth cancer one? You know, they really go along with it. But also, have you seen, they now sell with cigarettes. There's a new thing. They've got, like, colourful pack things that they put over your pack. Like, it's a colourful square.
Yes,
so
it's very cunning. It's big tobacco trying to beat the health warnings, isn't it? Because you can buy a little case to disguise the photos of your original package.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just all it's done is open up a new kind of marketing technique.
Tobacco's getting more profits because they're now selling an additional product with your cigarettes.
Exactly.
You get the case as well as the ciggies.
Exactly. Did you see that? The strange thing last week, I saw that, you know, the mouth cancer ones, the adverts, that person's not actually somebody suffering mouth cancer. That's all done with makeup. It's not actually
is that right?
Yeah, I think
lies in advertising.
You kind of feel like you go out there and find somebody with mouth cancer. Yeah, because now it's totally put me off makeup. I'm not going to use makeup anymore.
I know. I mean,
it makes you look like that.
I won't go to a Jim Carrey film anymore because, you know, I just know there's been makeup being involved and I've been put off makeup.
Exactly.
But isn't that interesting? Because I guess the rationale is there wouldn't be many people lacking the vanity. Like, let's say you were a victim of emphysema or suffering very badly from the effects of smoking. You probably still would have sufficient vanity to decline appearing all over the country in a photo. You don't want to be the poster boy for cancer.
I would have thought if you just say, you know, you're somebody with mouth cancer who's also a model.
Mm.
You know, you've been on the books for a long time looking for a gig. Finally, the one gig that comes up. And they give it to somebody with makeup.
Could we get some celebrity models on our packets? Like, you know, your John Elliott's, Warney. People are obviously very associated with smoking. Mm. Going in, sitting down in the makeup chair and just doing a big job on them. So sort of Warney, you know, just pants down. Yellow stains all around his mouth, a few teeth missing.
All you have to do, if you actually want to get his mouth to look like that mouth cancer, you just have to let Simone Warne near him now she's found out he slept with 1,000 people.
Well, Joe, that is Wolf and Cub. This Sunday afternoon with This Mess. Chris and Craig filling in for Roy and HG this afternoon up until 5 o'clock, whereupon Live at the Wireless will be on your radio featuring the UMI set that you might have caught on JTV last night. Very good afternoon to you, Jim. How are you?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Not bad. We're talking about these graphic images on the cigarette packets that the health authorities have imposed. What do you know about them?
I have a friend who collects them.
Collects them? That's nice. Kind of like your, you know, you used to get your Superman cards in your gum.
Or your baseball cards. Rugby league cards. And you swap.
Whole collection.
I'll swap my burnt out lung for your gangrene foot.
I've got a rare smoking kills pregnant babies here. Oh, pregnant. That's great.
How many are there to collect? I'm not across them, but, you know.
Don't know. I don't actually smoke myself, so I've got not much need to buy packets.
Does your friend smoke, or does he just collect them off other smokers?
She's a smoker.
She's a smoker.
And she has a pretty little Betty Page box to put them in when she actually carries them around, but she keeps this little collection of...
Is she also trying to collect the actual diseases? Like, she's going, look, I've got a bit of throat cancer now, but I'm hoping to go the mouth cancer...
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I'm smoking a bit harder.
I'm worried about it. It seems like the campaign's backfired and people are very attracted to these graphic images in an aspirational way. So people now might take up smoking to get the new cancerous look. And this is where they'll really come back to bite them for using such attractive models. If only they had used real people instead of beautiful rent-a-crowd extras just with some makeup on, then people wouldn't want to become one of them.
It's like, you know, we went through that period of heroin chic on the catwalks. Nowadays, if you go to Milan, it's nothing but mouth cancer all over the place.
Tobacco chic.
Exactly.
Gee, bloody well, thanks for sharing, Jim.
Not a problem.
Thank you very much. And if anyone can help him out with some to get the full set, give us a call this afternoon, 1300 055 36 on Bloody Sunday, Triple J.
Ever since I can remember.
On Triple J, that's Butterfingers with Like 'Em When They're Trouble. 3:10 on Bloody Sunday with Chris and Craig. And I noticed this: some of the other drugs have followed the trend of putting graphic images. I was out buying some heroin last night, and the dealer, before he gave me the cap, showed me some pictures of people
in gutters,
that kind of thing, and just on the little packet that they give it to you in. It's not easy getting a photo on those little packets.
No,
you need to buy quite a lot to fit the whole, which is a reason to upsell you.
Very regulated the heroin industry now.
Absolutely, but I was interested that it is spreading like that, and I just wish alcohol followed suit, and you'd see people like. Texting people, photos of people texting at 3 a.m. on the morning. No. If you drink this, this is what you might end up doing.
It's true, though. I've seen nowadays, you know, there's those kind of passion pop things.
Oh, yeah.
There's now a photo on if you drink these, and it's got a picture of you, Chris. You can't have met with you.
Sunday afternoon, this is Triple J. That's A-Skills with Crafty Cuts and Peaches. We also heard the very good My Morning Jacket in there with What a Wonderful Man. You are with Chris and Craig. What else has caught your eye, Craig?
Look, Chris, as a turkey slapper yourself, what do you think of the banning of the turkey slappers from Big Brother's final party?
Well, I heard about this. This is John and Ash.
I only know them as the turkey slappers.
I think it's now on their passports, and you know, it's just turkey slapper. Because John and Ash weren't actually their real name, were they? Apparently, on Big Brother, when you go in, if you have the same name as another
somebody
housemate,
else.
They just give you a substitute name. But from here on in, they're just going to be known as the turkey slappers. I think this is a very unfair punishment.
It's a bad decision.
No one condones the sexual harassment of these two housemates. But to treat them...
By the two housemates, by the way.
Not by the two housemates.
You've seen the whole scandal the wrong way.
Oh.
I just thought it was unfair, the way that woman put her head in front of that penis. I mean, that's a disgrace.
It is. But to treat the pair as exiles from society, it's like the old serf days in Russia. Where there was one rule for one. And, I know the crowning moment of any Big Brother season...
I think that was their argument. You don't want to create an underclass of turkey slappers, much like the serfs in Russia.
But I mean, if you do ostracise people from society, they will rise up. And to ostracise...
And you would hate to go to war with turkey slappers.
Oh, well, they'd have that.
Can you imagine in the field just getting turkey slapped around? I mean, they fight dirty turkey slappers.
Well, the Russian Revolution would have been very different, wouldn't it? If instead of taking up swords, they took up swords, if you know what I mean, and started turkey slapping around the Tsars and Nicholas there on the rush or the palace steps. But wouldn't Gallipoli have been different too?
Oh,
if our diggers led with the turkey.
That was, it would have confused
on Turkey.
The Turkish.
Because, fight
Turk on Turk.
Fight fire with fire. So there's no way to really get to a Turk than with a turkey.
I'd always presume that was what slapped them down the hill.
Maybe the Turkish. Is that where the name comes from? Is that how they won at Gallipoli? On Anzac Cove, the Turkeys just out Turkey slapped us.
It would have been strange if you'd learned young Turkish children learning, where did the name of our country come from, sir? It goes back to the great founder of our country. And he's
See, Simpson and his donkey, he had the wrong animal with it.
He
was dragging a turkey around there.
Well, maybe if he'd retaliated with donkey slapping. Because the donkeys, they can do a good slap.
Oh, a donkey, I see your turkey and raise you a donkey. I reckon you'd be winning that one, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Where were we?
This is the great shame of these people being kicked out, is that people at school watching it will misunderstand and will miss out on these fundamental historical lessons that you get from turkey slapping.
This history won't be taught because John and Ash have been silenced. I know Keith Windschuttle now is doing his best to revise history as we speak, so kids won't really learn what happened on the beaches at Gallipoli. Chris and Craig with you, doing Bloody Sunday. Filling in for Roy Natsch G on Triple J. That's Howling Bells with Setting Sun. And before then, we heard The Bravery with An Honest Mistake. It is a 10-4. I hope you're having a really, really good weekend. Now, Craig, in sports news, the cycling world was rocked this week. Cycling world absolutely devastated to learn that the winner of the Tour de France, Floyd Landis, had tested positive for drugs. Now, I know drugs...
Testosterone.
Yes, you tested positive for testosterone.
They found out he's a man.
Mm. How much...
It's a shock.
I mean, cycling and positive...
Drugs, I know.
I mean, it's just unheard of, isn't it? I mean, I can understand the shock in the cycling community. It's as unheard of as Bogan sexual harassment in the Big Brother house. Just wouldn't see it coming, would you?
Well, this is what shocked everyone, is he had testosterone. Because normally when you test a cyclist, it's all horse, you know, testosterone in there. Mm. But he had human testosterone.
How did it get in there? Whose testosterone was it? And was it slipped to him? Or did he take a mickey of testosterone? Or did he guzzle it? What was the latest on this?
I don't know. He claims maybe it just occurred naturally, which does happen. But obviously he had some massive level of testosterone. Mm. I don't know. You know, the people I feel sad for here is the Mennonite Christian community. Because Floyd Landis was the poster boy of the Mennonite Christian community. Did you see?
Look, I'm not... Just first of all, just to rewind on the guy's name. Floyd Landis. It sounds like a character from The Simpsons or something.
I know.
Don't you reckon Floyd Landis... Fake. It sounds like a name you make up when the cops pull you over or something.
From now on, if you get pulled over by the cops, you're Floyd Landis, okay?
There's maybe a tip for anyone driving home this afternoon. You might have been away of the weekend. If you're driving home, the cops pull you over for anything. Just say, what's your name? Floyd Landis.
Under the religion question on the census, I'm going to put down Floyd Landis.
Well, Floyd is my religion. Testosterone's my Eucharist. I'm not aware of his Christian background.
Well, no, because it was great, because when he won the Tour de France, they had these great pictures of his parents who missed, they didn't actually see the fact that he won the thing, because they're strict Mennonite Christians. They don't have a TV, and they were actually riding home from church, because they don't also drive cars. They were cycling home from church.
So it's sort of like the Amish in a way.
It's not quite Amish, but that apparently the whole thing about Mennonite Christians, and this is rare for religion, is that it's totally peaceable. They believe in total peace. They will never, you know, take up a sword against anyone.
That is unusual for Christians, isn't it?
It's strange for a religion.
Very unusual. So the Crusades were just a blemish, an anomaly for them.
Exactly. So here they were. Floyd Landis had won it. They were the poster boy for Mennonite Christians. And suddenly, drug scandal, and, you know, they're looking bad.
Where do they stand? Are the Mennonites denying this? Mm. I know Floyd is trying to clear his name at the moment. Mm.
They're taking out... They're no longer, when they sip from the glass at church, they're no longer going to have testosterone there, I believe.
It's an American branch, is it?
It's all over the world, mostly in Africa, but it's big in America.
Because, of course, in modern Christianity in America, they mainly evangelise through television, isn't it? With your big TV evangelists and all that kind of thing. Now, what would the equivalent be? I mean, how do people spread the word if you don't have a television to do it in America?
All you do is, because you make everyone cycle everywhere, you just hope that one day one of them will bloody win the Tour de France.
This is an act called Beirut on Triple J.
The times we are...
Sorry, we had to end the song Beirut. Invaded again. Israel. Typical bloody Israel.
Israel to invade the end of that.
Oh, yeah. They just can't stop.
I know there's
anything with Beirut.
There's a lot of hype about this guy called Beirut. If you're not across his story, he's a 19-year-old from New York in Brooklyn or something. Only 19 years old, and he's put out an album that's getting killer reviews called Gulag Orchestra. It's all featuring that real sort of Eastern European umpapa sound, and it's good, but... You couldn't have chosen worse timing in terms of naming yourself, could you? I know he had big plans for an Israel tour later this year. That's all off now.
Well, it'd be good for Beirut to go to Israel, because Israel's gone to Beirut.
Well, they have.
It would be the return tour.
An exchange program
exactly.
of sorts. But would you back yourself to get out alive if you put up on the marquee outside the venue, Beirut, rocking out? I mean, the Israeli army's going to storm in the first number, aren't they? Imagine the mosh pit. The casualty rate's higher than Lebanon's.
I know. Well, I'll tell you what, that heavy metal band, Hezbollah, currently touring Israel, shit, they're having some trouble.
On Triple J, that is TZU from the Smiling at Strangers record and In Front of Me. A very good afternoon. You are with Chris and Craig, filling in for Roy and HG for another couple of weeks. We're back next Sunday, and then Roy and HG return with This Sporting Life in a fortnight's time. A little bit of showbiz news came across the bloody Sunday desk here, Craig. You know, the actor Daniel Radcliffe, best known, in fact, I'll correct that, only known for playing Harry Potter in the cinema version of the best-selling books.
He was doing some movie in Adelaide last year.
Troy.
That hasn't really broke through, come through that one.
No, it hasn't emerged. What was it? Was it a sort of South Australia tourism campaign? Like Discover the Magic? Oh, is it sort of this kind of, you know, clever play on words with, or was it an actual feature film?
I think it was a feature film. I don't know what it was, though. I think it was just preparing for the wedding of the decade.
Right. Well, anyway, he's breaking out of his Harry Potter skin and leaving the world of movies to tread the boards on London's West End in the classic Peter Schaefer play, Equus. Now,
the story of a boy's infatuation with horses.
It's a slightly black affair. It's one of those plays that is sort of brought out every now and then, and some kids are forced to study it at school. Yes, a black comedy of kinds where the young boy, played by Daniel Radcliffe, has a naked scene with the horse to express his affection for the horse.
Yeah, he apparently has to simulate sexual pleasure while riding naked on the horse.
It's an obvious choice, isn't it, for Daniel? Because for too long he's been painted as the innocent magician.
I always thought he was simulating sexual pleasure when he was on the broom. In the Quidditch game. I think that's where they saw it and went, oh, yeah, he's good at that.
Yeah, well, I mean...
He likes the rider.
He's very much the Paris Hilton of his age. I mean, he's the male English Paris Hilton. I mean, I've only seen some of his adult videos. He's a dab hand with the handy cam and a couple of lines of coke. And I think the producers of Equus saw some of these films and thought, there's a guy I want to see naked with a horse.
Well, J.K. Rowling is continually saying that the Harry Potter character is getting blacker and blacker and blacker.
Mm.
And I presume this is the next step. He's training for the last Harry Potter role, which is him nude, simulating sexual predator while playing Quidditch on the broom.
It's a purely X-rated version of Harry Potter. Now, what number are we up to in the series so far at the
754.
Cinema? 754. It gets very X-rated. There won't be a need for a broomstick at all because he'll be bringing his own. It's good, isn't it? That's the new project for Kevin Mitchell from Jebediah. He's now going under the moniker Bob Evans.
Done that a bit. It's good stuff.
It's great. The record's called Suburban Songbook, and that one is Nowhere Without You. We're talking Daniel Radcliffe's new theatre enterprise. He's treading the boards in Peter Schaefer's play Equus, riding on a horse naked.
Yes. And have you ever seen this? Do they use a live horse? Because it's a theatrical production. Well, do they use a horse?
It's open to interpretation, of course, as with all theatre, Craig. When Barry Kosky directed the piece, he used a giraffe. That's very Kosky.
I thought he would use an erect penis. It's Kosky.
The giraffe had one, I think. But no, they're going for a much more literal interpretation, I understand, in the Daniel Radcliffe version, which also co-stars Richard Griffiths, who is also in the Harry Potter films, and played Monty in With Nell and I. Remember that very rotund actor? You'd know the guy if you saw him. So it's a bit of a Harry Potter cast reunion.
Onto IMDb? Did I click on?
As far as I know, the horse didn't star in any of the Harry Potter movies, so it's not used to working with these two actors, so anything could happen.
Because having, I don't know if anyone saw the Chasers War and everything last Friday, having worked with a horse on set, like we had a horse on set for the show, and it bit me during the screening of it. But it was one of the moments where it was, you know, the camera wasn't on. So it's like, I've just been bitten for nothing.
Well, no, in many ways, I think Rocky, the horse on our show, knew the cameras weren't on. So he was getting a lot of that blue, vindictive sort of gear out of the way early. Because it would be a bad look, you know, going Craig Rucastle live on air. But he knew when the cameras weren't on, he could really nuzzle your nads.
But it was true that as soon as the cameras would come back on, the horse would suddenly behave.
Mm.
It was really bizarre. It was as if the horse knew. And apparently it has done a lot of productions. It's been in Saddle Club and that kind of stuff.
Oh, very professional. And I've written a reference for him for Equus overseas in London. And look, I just don't know why horses aren't used more often in some of the great roles of theatre. I mean, I would have thought, in Death of a Salesman, for instance, the great Arthur Miller play, you could have had a horse in the Willy Loman role and it wouldn't lose anything. I think a horse would actually bring something to the character of the salesman.
That horse, Rocky, we worked with, was a much better actor than we were.
It was much better.
But if it's not actually using, like in Equus, right, if you don't actually use a real horse, like, it must be pretty lame if you've got one of those pantomime horses with, you know, two guys in it and you've got Daniel Radcliffe kind of, stimulating sexual pleasure across... I mean, that would slightly change the nature of the play.
It would change, much in the same way the history was almost rewritten when in the original Troy, attack where they wanted to have the Trojan horse. Yeah. They just the first to crack at that was just two guys dressed
two
in a horse suit.
So
it just didn't fool anyone. On Triple J, you're doing Bloody Sunday with Chris and Craig. We started there with Louis the 14th and finding out true love is blind. And the Go Team also in there with The Power Is On.
And for all the Royal HG fans who have been starved of a bit of a sport, let's quickly go to the cricket. Chris, did you see Sri Lanka versus South Africa? A record partnership, about 624, I think it was. Between, and also that they got 5 for 756, and then they declared. And now South Africa had got 169 in the first innings. Do you think they declared too early? I mean, I think they're a bit risky.
It was a brave declaration.
It was. I mean, only 580 in the lead and another innings. I think they should have kept going.
624 was the partnership. I think it was the third wicket stand for two of the Sri Lankan batsmen. The 624, it's almost as many women as Warne bedded when he was touring there last himself.
Exactly. Well, this is it. I mean, Warney declaring at 1,000 women and getting out. What do you think, too early? Yeah, he got out there.
Well,
too
has he declared at 1,000?
I don't think he has.
I mean, if you're not across the latest stats, and they will be tabled in the census, which is forthcoming, there'll be another category to have you rooted Warnie this year.
Yeah, that's the new religion.
Where were you?
I'm a Warnie rooter.
I'm a Warnism. where were you on the night?
You get two things. You get tax exemption and chlamydia.
Warnie is one of the few people that needs to fill out several census forms, in that because he's in so many different places in one
so
night.
Many houses,
he's in about 12 different women's houses on census night. That he, bloody hell, have I got to fill out another one? Oh, where were you on the night? Oh, God, what's your name, love? Okay, I'm in here. But no, the you might have seen extracted in some of the Saturday broadsheets excerpts from journalist Paul Barry's unauthorised biography on Shane Warne with, wait for it, Piss Lane Pun Alert, Spun Out is the title.
Nice.
Spun Out.
Where did they get that from?
I know, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah,
and there's a bit of controversy because he claims, well, he kind of recounts the story of a friend of Warne. He's saying that, you know, he's probably bedded about 1,000 women over time. And Simone Warne is a bit annoyed by this. She's come out saying she's going to sue Paul Barry when she speaks to her lawyers about that. Because what was her line on it again?
Well, she's saying, I don't like what Barry has said, and I'm really disappointed that he's discredited our marriage.
Yes.
Because, of course, it was Paul Barry that discredited your marriage, Simone, wasn't it? Look, it was nothing that Shane ever did.
It's true. Because, I mean, if he'd screwed 100 women, I would consider that to be, you know, a model marriage. Whereas 1,000, that's just discredited.
She's actually said that. Simone Callaghan, as she now likes to be called, it goes on to say, 1,000 is a lot of women, and I don't think that's the case. I'm speaking to my lawyers to see if I have an argument. Now,
to check if it is a lot of women.
So it's only the number.
Is it legally 1,000 a lot of women?
It's the number she's disputing. I mean, it would have been a very stable marriage, as you say, at, say, 200 infidelities. But I think now that Barry's throwing, you know, numbers like 1,000 around, then she's got a serious case on her
hands. I think her real problem with it is that he basically claims that she's a bit slow. And I think he claims that, you know...
Not slow in the bedroom. It was...
slow on... No, the Simone Warne is a bit... Yeah, slow on the uptake.
Slow on the uptake's the exact phrase.
Yeah, because I think he's basically saying, look, you know, he's bedded 1,000 women and she only caught him out on 5. And that's good. I don't know. If you do your stats, that's not very good. 5 for 1,000.
Well, this is...
That's not good. Warne would spit on those
figures. His strike rate would be much better if he actually, you know, News of the World actually reported more of them. That's why Warne's so pissed off. He said, I've done 1,000. Bloody hell, only the journos have only caught me 5 times. Which is why we need to amend some of the questions on census night so we can get a better idea of just how many Australian women have bedded him.
Exactly. I'm one of them.
On Triple J, that is Phoenix with a long distance call. 25 past 4. A reminder that Richard Kingsmill is going to be on your radio at 5 o'clock presenting live at the Wireless a really tremendous set by UMI was recorded for JTV, followed by a set by The Exploders. So that's coming up on Triple J shortly. But just on this, the Warne book, Paul Barry was very lucky, actually, to get it published in the end because originally it was called Warne Town. And he was with ABC Books, and they were very concerned about the amount of sex and innuendo in the book.
The bit where he claimed he slept with Alan Jones.
I know.
They just didn't like that particular bit.
Warnie was okay with that. Warnie didn't mind that him and Alan Jones, that story was out there, but apparently Jones and the ABC board were concerned.
They were very concerned. The interesting thing about this, a couple of strange things about the book. One thing is all the stories about the women he picked up who had no idea who he was or didn't like cricket.
Yeah.
Now, I would have thought that pretty much of the 1,000, you would have got 999 of those being cricket fans, but apparently not. No, well, he's got a smooth mover. He's a bit of a talker.
He's a real ladies' man. A lot of people find him a looker. And what was interesting, I've only read the extracts, so the book's not out yet, but he has a thing for blondes.
Really? blondes.
Mm.
And slappers. Apparently he loves a slapper.
I mean, they say opposites track, but in this case, he loves his own.
He basically loves someone exactly like himself. The thing is, the reason it's an unauthorised biography is because Paul Barry came out and said he slept with 1,000 people. In the authorised one, it says he slept with 3,000.
On Triple J, that is Muse with Assassin. That came off the back of Perth band Halogen from their Baby Eyes EP. We heard the title track from that, called, funnily enough, Baby Eyes. It is a 25 to 5, Bloody Sunday with Chris and Craig, and still on this warning book, we've had a call from, remember, Theological Phil.
Oh, yes.
How are you, Theological Phil?
All right. Chris, yourself?
Very, very well. Now, for those that don't know, you're a one-time correspondent for the former Today Today program. You are a Bible study correspondent.
Yeah.
And how exactly does the Bible relate to Warnie? I'm fascinated.
Well, you were talking about he's been accused of sleeping with 1,000 women. And mm-hmm. I was just thinking, you were saying that a lot of these women didn't know he was a cricket player. And I was just thinking, there was a character in the Bible called Solomon who had like 600 or 700 wives and 300 or 400 mistresses. I'm mm-hmm. thinking that's how he got by. He's just saying he's King Solomon. Add to my number.
There you go.
It's like the cult of Warnie.
So in actual fact, what we've seen here in the Bible is that Warnie's not leading the tally. I mean, this is if Warnie finds out about this, he's going to go nuts. Because he's ahead on the lovers, but he's got to find another 599 wives, and that's going to be tough for him.
Well, he's making very slow progress on that front. What's the scoreboard showing there? Just one?
Just one.
And even that's sort of busted down. So does that go into negative figures, or do we chalk up Simone as one?
Well, he's got one, but he's well behind Solomon. And this is a disgrace.
Okay, so come census night, we need a new statistic. So not only how many people have slept with Warnie...
Are you willing to marry him?
Or have you been a wife of Warnie? Now, even Costello knows the number on that one. It's probably just one. But if there's any mystery wives or, like, you know, he's had a mystery ball, if he's got a mystery wife hidden somewhere, then that would also be of interest to the Australian Bureau of Statistics.
It's good to know, too. You know, a lot of people forget there's these good kind of stories in the Bible. There's the salacious bits.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people concentrate on all the good lessons and Jesus' work, but there's old saucy Solomon. If you want to be a Casanova, you can learn everything there.
Oh, it's all smart. I wouldn't be surprised if Daniel Radcliffe is reenacting the Bible. Live on stage, naked,
saucy bitch.
Naked with a horse. I mean, you tell me that donkey in the manger during Christ's birth would have loved a young, naked Daniel Radcliffe on West End next year.
Thanks, Theological Phil.
Good to hear from you, Theological Phil. Right now, let's listen to this track from Melbourne outfit Gautier. This one's called Heart's a Mess. It is 20 to 5. Triple J. And that's Gautier. From a record called Like Drawing Blood and a track, Heart's a Mess. You are with Chris and Craig. It's 20 to 5 on Bloody Sunday. What the real extraordinary thing about this Paul Barry book on Shane Warne is just the subject that Paul himself has chosen. There was a time when he used to write books about king hitters like Kerry Packer, Alan Bond, you know, people that really shaped the Australian way of life. Do you have Shane Warne in that category? Maybe he's even larger than life than Kerry Packer.
He is. He shapes everyone's behaviour.
Mm.
You know, turkey slapping, that's because of Warnie.
Mm.
All that kind of stuff.
Mm.
We look up to him.
Well, speaking of turkey slapping, what sort of biographies can Paul Barry turn to next? Will we see the hot dog story coming from Paul Barry or Bree? Someone like that. Could he be? I think Bree's in the news at the moment. Paul Barry, if he wants to get a start now, if Pan McMillan or anyone else is listening and want to just offer an advance to Paul Barry to write The Rise and Fall of Bree, which I know you could have out for Christmas, it'd be a very attractive
read. Very early to speak of her fall. Hasn't she just been saved because of her spot on television on Friday Night Games?
I mean career fall rather than health fall. But you know, what was this? This was an extraordinary story where a viewer who was...
A doctor.
A doctor who, for some reason, doctors now watch Friday Night Games... I thought doctors were the intelligent sector of our society. For some reason, they're all at home after doing a 26-hour shift down at the hospital. Chilling out to Friday Night Games.
What's the problem? They're so bloody tired now. They can't get it off Channel 10. Oh, damn, can't change the channel. Let's watch Friday Night Games. She had some kind of huge thing on her neck or something.
A lump. No one else apparently noticed. No one in the studio working on the show seemed to see this prominent lump. But a viewer, medically trained, rang up Channel 10 and expressed concern about the lump. She nicked out to have some tests done, and apparently it's a bit
biopsy,
serious.
Yeah. Mm. What does our health system come to? It's now quicker to get a doctor to see you by going into a house for 3 months than having some strange backup career on Friday Night Games. It's the quick way. Mm. Now you had all these people wanting to get into the media, wanting to get, going into the Big Brother house. Now you can have all these other people with, critical illnesses. Mm.
People
just queuing up to get in the Big Brother house to get diagnosed.
People that can't, see a doctor at all. Like you've been queuing up for about, let's say a week in the emergency ward, unable to get a bed, forced to audition for Australian Idol just to be anywhere near a bloody television camera on the off chance a doctor's there to diagnose their ailment.
Well, they haven't diagnosed the people in Australian Idol. What about old Andrew G?
Mm.
There's something wrong with his head. That looks like there's something happening there. No one's gone and rung up Darren Ten and said, send him to a doctor. Mm. That is wrong.
And why haven't we had any psychiatrists, watching Quizmania at 12 a.m. on night saying they've clearly got a mental problem, the hosts of these shows? That is Arcade Fire from Canada with Neighbourhood Number 2 off their record called Funeral. You are with Chris and Craig for just over another 10 minutes or so before Live at the Wireless takes over with a cracking set from UMI. But look, doctors diagnosing people they see on television, it is the way of the future. Can Bree claim that on Medicare, or because it wasn't an official visit to a GP, is it more just a freebie that he's done for her there?
Sounds like a freebie to me, but I like the idea of being able to claim it on Medicare. I think there could be a whole separate medical health system. Like a whole medical system could go through this. Like she gets diagnosed on Big Brother, then she goes to RPA to get the actual surgery done. If there's any mishap, there's all those medical mishap programs. You can then, if there's any scarring, you can go on those makeover programs, get a bit of plastic surgery.
There's Channel 10's programming for 2007.
Exactly. Just follow Bree through this whole process.
I know she's not Robinson Crusoe in this. She's not the first time that someone on TV's been diagnosed. Jessica Rowe had no idea she was pregnant until someone, I don't know why someone was watching the Today Show, but a doctor was just up and noticed a bit of a bulge, and next thing he knows rings up the Today program and says you should get along to some tests.
She vomited during something Carl Stefanovic was saying. And most of the viewers just thought that was because Carl Stefanovic was so, horrible.
I get morning sickness watching
exactly
Carl Stefanovic.
Whereas the doctor said, hang on a second, I think this may be a pregnancy there. Oh, this is happening everywhere.
It is, and as you say, if we can somehow formalise it, so we just have doctors on call, no longer doing, house visits or working in hospitals, but somehow just set up watching CCTV. So I know there's a lot of it around now, literal Orwellian Big Brother, CCTV cameras around our streets. If you can just set up a panel, a specialist, a couple of GPs and someone in each specialist area watching pedestrians go about their business in the street, diagnosing where they see fit.
I like the idea there's suddenly a real reason for boneheading people. There's a news cross going on and people get bonehead behind. You're just kind of boneheading for the doctors there.
I like that.
I just want to show you my knee.
I just
tripped over.
Yeah, no, Tim Bailey, I'm not trying to interrupt your weather cross. I literally am just trying to see if this lump on my neck is benign.
Is this crabs?
That's great stuff, isn't it? That's a new song from Bertie Blackman called Hold Me Close this afternoon on Triple J. You are with Chris and Craig doing Bloody Sunday. UMI live at the Wireless up very, very shortly.
Also the Exploders after that.
Exploders on the back of the UMI. Look, is it? I guess the danger of doctor diagnosis via television is that a lot of TV executives, and I'm looking at Eddie McGuire, might defer nasty decisions to doctors in the future. So if they want to get someone off air, hint, hint, Jessica Rowe, hint, hint, Yana Wendt,
yes,
they might just hire a doctor specifically to say, hey, can you just watch Sunday, you know, this week and just, you know, just think that
tell
she's
Yana Wendt she's sick.
Tell Yana she's got something
she's
really...
got the flu. Tell her to stay home next week.
Something looking a bit malignant, just growing, and just, you know, get her... Because, you know, Eddie then keeps his own hands absolutely squeaky clean, and the doctors are forced to do his duty work at the Nine Network.
I can't believe Eddie never got anyone calling in and saying it a disease. Eddie, you love yourself.
Now, we've got time, a little bit of time left, Craig. What else is on the bloody Sunday news desk there?
Look,
if I've thrown you one.
Well, I don't know. I can't remember what we're going to talk about. I can't remember.
Well, why don't we... I've got something here on Mel Gibson, who's fallen foul in Hollywood news.
Oh! Mel, poor Mel. What did he... I saw this. He's...
Well, a doctor was obviously watching him on closed circuit television driving his car in LA. Now, Mel, of course, for those that don't know the Mel Gibson story, is an alcoholic. And he's been attending AA for the last 20 years. Yeah. He's off the wagon.
He's a reformed alcoholic.
No
longer.
But apparently he's been done for drink driving.
Yeah, he was massively over the limit. He was doing... this is always... If you are going to drink and drive, just a bit of a tip from the world of Mel... Don't do 140 kilometres an hour in a 70 zone.
Mm.
It's sometimes a bit of a getaway, giveaway, you know. Only O.J. Simpson does that kind of thing. You know, don't go that way.
Still, I mean, I understand he ran over a few people, which was also a bit of a giveaway, but still there was less blood on the victims than there was in Passion of the Christ, which for Mel is absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, thank God.
Anyway, thank you very much for your company this Sunday afternoon. We'll be back for one more bloody Sunday next Sunday afternoon, filling in for Roy and HG, but please do stick around. Richard Kingsmill is up next on your radio with that Live at the Wireless set by UMI. Bye now.